Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. We got with us Katie Galley, our producer. And what's your title?
The Supreme Chancellor.
Supreme Chancellor.
But more importantly, and certainly going to be a lot of fun today, we have with us Chief Product Officer with Evident. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Nathan Rowe. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Well, Nathan, can you talk a little bit about Evident? How are you serving folks?
Absolutely. So at Evident, we provide customers a simple and secure platform that allows them to get verified data about individuals without ever having to hold or handle the really sensitive personal information associated with it.
And then, like, who are these individuals?
Well, it's really whoever the business would want to work with. So
like the boyfriend of my daughter.
Well, if you were a business, that could be a use case. Right. We see a lot of different use cases. Right now, we're focused on what we call marketplace. There's a lot of activity in the sharing economy, mm-hmm. and we see a lot of different opportunities that they need to know who they're dealing with, right? So say you get in a car with someone that's going to drive you somewhere, you stay at someone's house, you know, the risk profile has changed right. dramatically, and they need a lot more information, and they have a lot more sensitivity around how they handle that and need to know answers to questions, and we give them the ability to do that.
So because now, I guess, the marketplace has shifted so much where these sharing economy companies are kind of immersing ourselves into our lives, and people are coming and going to our house, we're driving in their car, and they're, to us, we're putting a lot of faith in those kind of apps and software, right?
Absolutely. And that's really what's key, is that you trust the brand, but typically the brand has a very loose relationship with the individual providing the service. So,
right.
you know, five years ago, you would have never gone to a stranger's house and just slept
right.
in one of their beds. And now we don't really
like
think
normal.
Of that as uncommon.
Right.
Yeah.
Or get in their car. That's the thing that's really boggles the mind for me. Like at one point it was like, that's like hitchhiking, you know?
It was. It absolutely
how is
was.
It different than hitchhiking?
Yeah. And I think what you're really hitting on is the change in sensitivity of the application, right?
Right.
Now we have true strangers coming into our house to clean or hang a TV or watch our children or
right.
drive us somewhere.
Drop a package off. Like all kinds. It's literally, it could be dozens of times a week that this is occurring.
Probably more than that, right? And we don't even know it anymore, right?
Right.
It's just so commonplace.
But why do you think that we've been able to kind of make that leap pretty seamlessly?
I think it goes to convenience, right? As consumers want these services, they want things on demand. Now that we have these high-powered mobile computing devices that are constantly connected to the world in our pockets, we want a car to show up exactly where we say it
right.
should be when we want it to be there.
Right.
So the convenience has driven it. And I think we all took a leap and it felt very safe. And as typically what happens with these sort of trends, you start to have bad actors that get in and
right.
try to find ways to exploit.
Right, they start gaming the system.
Gaming or looking for ways to profit from it. Yeah,
right.
absolutely.
So now that's where you guys come in.
That is where we come in. Yeah, so we provide our customers the ability to know exactly who they're dealing with, but a lot of our customers don't necessarily want to have sensitive documents and sensitive personal information about them. They just want to know that, yes, they have a clean driving record, they have a safe car, They are who they say they are, and we've done some identity proofing. Because the other dramatic shift over what would typically be a W-2 employee is a lot of these companies never meet anyone face-to-face.
Right.
So the ability to truly know who you're dealing with changes dramatically as you start looking at some of these new applications that really never was the case 5 years ago. Because when you went to a grocery store or a big box store, those were all employees. Those had been interviewed through a formal
right.
process. They sat across the table. They looked at identity documents. They really had good confidence in who they're dealing with. And now it's sign up online. You never physically meet anyone, and then you send them into someone's house,
right?
Right? Or you send them to pick someone up. And that's where the need to really prove someone and then know who they are, the credentials about them, starts to become dramatically different. And you think about different use cases, whether it's babysitting, you know, you might want to check to see someone actually has a CPR certification in pediatric or infant CPR, you know, which is going to be very different than if you have someone coming in to do electrical work in your house, right? You don't
right.
just want anyone coming in. You want to make sure they are properly licensed and certified to do that work.
Now, when this start of kind of disruption occurs in any one of the, it seems like, you know, I remember it first, I guess, in the in the house home sharing, and then it moved to the car sharing, and then now you have your dog walked by somebody. Like, it's like now it's in places like you could never have anticipated 5 years ago, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a little bit overused, but everybody wants to be the Uber of X, right? And we see a lot of these very small, very niche, very specialized cases come up. But the trend that we've seen, as they become more specialized, the sensitivity increases and the risk profile changes dramatically, because typically it is something where there's more risk associated to the consumer that's using the service.
And then when this happens, when the disruption occurs, though, at first, you know, the regulation for this stuff is like, how can I regulate? It didn't exist last year when we made laws.
Exactly.
You know, like, so the regulation is shifting now, right? And there's something called the GDPR.
GDPR, yeah. And that's
what
actually,
does that stand for?
The General Data Protection Regulation. And that's actually a little bit broader than, you know, this specific sharing economy. It would actually touch any and everything that's really going on,
so
with how you're
overreach in the regulation?
just broader application, not specific to the sharing economy.
But okay, am I reading this right, though, that one of the big benefits for me as a business is you're getting me out of the middle of it. I'm just getting what I need to run my business effectively and have my peace of mind. But now you're kind of getting me off the hook and out of, I don't have to worry about the fact that I've got this person's health records and I'm supposed to be protecting that. You got all that. That's the big advantage for me, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And as a business, you see that. And just one point of clarification, we as Evident don't just hold and centralize that. That would be actually problematic, because the liability shift doesn't solve a security problem. Mm-hmm. But what it does is we employ a great deal of cryptography in our platform, and we actually distribute the data through the individual devices. So from an attacker standpoint, which when you get down to it, the data is so valuable because it can be resold and monetized on marketplaces. From an attacker standpoint, because that data is now distributed, the effort to go compromise the data increases exponentially,
right.
And they won't go after it because it's not there's no return in it for them.
And then so the value to the consumer is that you're getting who you think you're getting. The service.
Exactly.
Person, right.
Exactly. And the business has a much simpler way. And then the cybersecurity associated with protecting the data, the requirements there go down significantly.
Mm-hmm. And then, so is this regulation, the GDPR regulation, is that a US thing? Is that international?
GDPR is specific to the EU. So the EU as an entity has defined this regulation almost 2 years ago now as really an update to the previous regulation, which was built in 1995. And if you look at everything that's changed since then, in 1995, most people didn't know about the internet, much less have a high-powered computer device that would allow you to, in high definition, FaceTime with someone on the other side of the planet for free. You know, those are such dramatic shifts that you just look at how much the technology has changed. Obviously, the previous regulation from 95 was very dated and needed to be updated. I think you also combine that with some of the mega trends we see as far as people being much more aware of how their data is being used and a lot of times without their consent or control, and their desire for privacy. Now, you can certainly look at cultural differences. EU is much more sensitive to that than the US. But you look at Pew studies of even the US, there's much more year after year when these studies happen, there's much more sensitivity. And you just see this need for consumers, or this desire by consumers, to have more control. So, you know, it really is a global trend, but the regulation is specific to the EU.
So my on-air discipline is almost always to never ask about pricing and fee structure, because I want the people who are on the show to be able to provide enough proper context, and that may or may not have been done in the course of the conversation. I'm going to break that discipline right here, because I think you ought to be on the rooftops talking about this fee structure loud and proud. This just blew my mind. I'm on your website here. I mean, just mention a little bit about your fee structure. That everything he's talking about, I want you to hear this fee structure, Lee.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do, we try to make this really simple for our customers, package it up in a price point that's very reasonable for them. So we would allow a customer to come in and really verify the identity, go through a set of trust and safety checks associated with them, and then come out and actually even get an additional credential. So if you want a professional license or the CPR certification, which we mentioned earlier, be able to go out and verify all those things for really right around $20. And with volume, it actually can become even more cost effective than that.
I spent that on bacon this week.
So that's the company that has the sharing service contracts with you, and then you're kind of vetting their thing and kind of putting the stamp of approval that this person is who they say they are.
Correct. We give them a single API where they can just do a quick integration. They can help achieve any of the compliance things that are out there, not limited to, but including GDPR. And they get all that verification. They effectively could get a thumbs up and really simplifies their business.
Take place at the hiring level, like before they're even hired?
Typically, that's where it does. It's inserted as part of the onboarding. And the other key difference here is the volume. So the need for this to be automated, to allow these businesses to onboard hundreds of people a day, right? You think about these large companies, that's literally the volume that they're doing.
Are they? So like if you're a car sharing, one of those companies, you're going into a new market, you could be onboarding hundreds of drivers.
Well, the big car sharings are doing thousands of drivers.
In a given market.
Absolutely.
And so right now their system is they have their own kind of way of doing it.
There's a bunch of different ways that are out there to do it. We don't see anyone in the market that's offering this level of compliance along with getting the data. The mm-hmm. data itself is somewhat commoditized, but the packaging of putting the ID verification with some of the data verifications with the external credentials, and then really wrapping that all up in a compliant way that you can go about getting that is what's unique to Evident.
And then walk me through the thing. So I'm with this car sharing or dog walking sharing company.
Yep.
And I got people. You're shaking your head. That's a real thing.
I know.
And there's
a
couple of them here in town.
there are a couple in town. Yes.
Right. I'm not making this up.
I know, but you specifically, you're very big on services, which I think is great, but you have a lot of services.
I know, but people are using this. They wouldn't exist if people.
People are adopting very, very significantly.
Right. So that someone goes in their house and takes their dog, goes for a walk and brings back their dog. Right?
Absolutely.
That's how it works. They're not there.
Nope. That's the whole point. You don't have to worry about
exactly.
it. And it's convenient and it's easy and you just tap
a button
on your mobile
phone. But you're trusting a stranger to go into your house, take the dog and bring
him
back.
Absolutely.
That's a high level of trust.
That is a very high level of trust that's needed.
Right. So your thing, I'm this company, I'm Business Radio X dog walking company that we just invented. So now I call you guys. I'm like, okay, now I got some person that says, hey, I'm in. So now what happens from their standpoint?
So we offer a couple different ways to do integration, but it would be part of that registration as that person that's wanting to provide that service says they're in, they effectively go through some level of registration process and our customer would define the level of diligence that's needed for that application.
But what are the recommendations, right? Because you have best practices.
We absolutely do. And they would go through their standard registration process, right? Very similar to what
like
we do.
It's like a job application, right?
It is. It is absolutely the same thing.
And then so they go through and they say, I'm this, I walked a million dogs, I'm certified dog CPR or whatever, right? Like they're going to have some credentials.
You laugh. That is a certification.
Right, exactly. So now you come in. Right. At some point, your service has to come overlay on this, right?
Yes. So we can be embedded as they're putting that information in. So think of the really sensitive information like a date of birth or a social security number.
Right.
These are typically pieces of information that these companies don't actually need to operate, right? That's not always the case, but generally it is. And we allow them to never have to see, process, or hold that, but still get that, yes, this is valid. This is a valid individual. We've proofed the identity and we've done a trust and safety and credential check and they meet your requirements. And then they get that back. So they get those business answers they need to operate without necessarily having to touch, hold, or handle that sensitive personal data, which is then where the liability comes in associated with something like GDPR.
Mm-hmm. And then, but from your standpoint, you're doing this, you're not like calling references, are you? You're doing this in some kind of automated way.
Absolutely,
too, right?
Yeah. And for scale, it obviously has to be automated. So we will go check whether it's public records, private records, credentials, universities, previous employers. There's ways to automate all of that, and we build all of that into this single API. So really, any question that a business might have that they want to answer about an individual, whether it's a consumer or a employee, it's a provider, as typically called in these marketplaces. We give them the channel to be able to go do that. And you look at the way it's set up today, typically they have to go out and they would have to contract with handful of different businesses and do integration with a handful of different businesses.
So you have economies of scale because you're doing it for everybody.
We do it for everybody. And obviously we go much broader than most of the other data providers.
Right, because they can maybe only afford a couple of things where you can, because you're doing it for so many different people, you can go broader.
Absolutely. It also gives us higher security because we have an anchor of this proofed identity that we're able to tie everything else to. So you have much more confidence in the answer.
Now, how do you combat against the person that is like, trying to leverage identity theft or something like that, where they aren't who they say and they are kind of a bad actor?
That's a great question. And I think with a lot of the trends that are going on right now around data being stolen and being available to be purchased on the dark web for really next to nothing, almost free.
Crypto pennies.
Yeah, crypto pennies are worth a lot more than a regular penny. But you have the ability to go out there and actually vet somebody using alternative methods. So the kind of the gold standard had been knowledge-based verification. And just last year, the one of the federal organizations, the National Institute for Standards and Technology, NIST, has basically said knowledge-based verification, KBA, KBV, are the acronyms you might hear associated with that, are no longer valid way to go proof or identify who someone is, because really anything about us, whether it's public records, where did you live 5 years ago? What phone number were you ever associated with? To, you know, information about your first car, your pet, things like that. All of that can be found online
now. Mother's maiden name isn't going to cut it anymore.
Absolutely. So I really like to say that knowledge-based verification is friction for the valid people, the good customers you want to get in the door. And it's such a small speed bump for the bad guys that it's kind of silly to put in, right? Because the downside of that friction is so much higher. So we look at alternative ways to do that proofing. For us, it's really the anchor of everything that we do is really understanding who that individual is. We'll go out and we'll do some new ways where we can actually scan an identity document. So think driver's license, ID card, passport. We can then take a selfie of that individual and compare the picture. So we'll do a forensic analysis on the document.
Facial recognition.
And then facial recognition to the document. So now all of a sudden we have a confidence that you're holding a document that was issued by the state of Georgia, for example. We can check the information on there with public records to know that it's valid. So you haven't just made up or gone and bought a Chinese fake identity.
Right.
And then the selfie actually with liveness detection proves that you are physically there, right? It's not that you just picked up a driver's license you found laying on the ground and can register.
Right.
So all of a sudden now you get a much higher level of confidence. You know who you're dealing with than if you were just using knowledge-based verification. Because quite frankly, I could go be Lee. I could go be Stone on any of these websites and register, right? I know how to go get that data and do that. And that's a scary thing. If you're only doing knowledge-based verification, the bar is much higher if you use these other mechanisms to prove that identity.
How did you personally get in this line of work? Has this always been your thing?
I've been doing this for quite a while now, almost 15 years. So,
because you're paranoid?
I would
you
say
have a scar tissue, bad experience.
I actually didn't. I didn't have a bad experience, but it was cybersecurity was always something that I was interested in. Mm-hmm. And given being in Atlanta, such a cybersecurity technology hub. There was plenty of opportunities to go participate in meaningful ways in the cybersecurity industry and start trying to make a difference, right? It's a little bit of a cat and mouse game. And I think that's what keeps it interesting is that you're up against well-funded, whether it's organized crime or state actors, very, very well-funded.
Right. This is their job.
Very motivated.
A hobbyist.
No, absolutely not. I mean, long gone are the days when someone wanted to deface a website to get some street
Matthew
cred.
Broderick and the War Games.
That's not who we're dealing
with here.
No.
Now, for you, though, what did cybersecurity look like 15 years ago? What were the problems back then?
So I actually got into cybersecurity right after the firewall and IPS trend had just gone by. And there was this new thing called Wi-Fi. And most people didn't even really know about it or understand it, right? It was used in warehouses and retailers because they needed some connectivity as they had people out on shop floors or in the warehouse. And what we started seeing was that all those same risks and vulnerabilities that existed once you hooked your business up to the internet existed once you start putting Wi-Fi in your place of business. And it ended up just being another entry point to get on the network. So for me personally, it was getting in to say, how do you change the game for a retailer that has a lot of credit card information. And, you know, back in the early 2000s, that was the most valuable information right. you could go get. And you think back to the TJX hack of 2006, there was the Target breach, the Home Depot breach, that was stealing tens of thousands, or actually tens of millions of credit right. cards. And then they could take that and go sell those. Then and every card was very valuable because it could be used. So that was the entry point to get on. So that was kind of the new thing that was happening and the most exciting place to be in cybersecurity back then. And that's where I got started.
So things haven't changed that much in that still credit cards, these things are at risk all the time. Now it's evolved, obviously, to more things like identity, where people are faking passports and more kind of more difficult or historically difficult things to...
Correct. Yeah. And if you actually look at what's happened, you know, the U.S. is definitely a laggard with credit cards to do the chip, right? We've all gone through the miserable experience of putting the card in and it took forever to validate, right? But that has basically made card-not-present fraud in stores go away. And what attackers have done is that they've now gone online. So most of that credit card type of fraud is now online via e-com, and e-com deals with a lot of chargebacks.
There's no chip in e-com yet.
There's no chip. There's no pin.
There's going to be on my laptop a chip reader, right?
Exactly. And things like Android Pay and Apple Pay have come to try to deal with some of those deficiencies.
Mm-hmm. So now, I guess you'll always have job security, right? Because this problem's not going away anytime soon,
no,
right?
It will continue to evolve, but there's always going to be new interesting ways that the bad guys are trying to compromise our personal data and, you know, do very bad things with it.
But who's winning?
You know, it's a war game. I like to think that we're winning. We've definitely changed the dynamics for them. They've had to get much more sophisticated. You know, as an industry, there's areas that we could have done a lot better as far as, you know, I think about some of the most basic things. You know, you look today, generally breaches happen because of human error, right? Somebody didn't configure something, somebody didn't patch something, someone didn't put an update on, right? So it's the industry has gotten better about that, but the organizations, the enterprises really struggle with, I have all these legacy proprietary systems. How do I deal with it? So, you know, I think it's not, you know, for me, it's not a question of winning because it's always the cybersecurity is always setting the bar higher. Mm-hmm. But the bad guys are always coming right behind. And I think, you know, you start to look at that at a broad trend. You know, the unfortunate reality is there's no decline in year over year of the number of personal records that are stolen. So, you know, if you break it down that way, we're not winning because the trend is the wrong direction. And I think you'll have to see that change before, you know, we would actually declare, hey, we're winning. But it's hard to compare at that level.
Now, it seems it's kind of tricky from a consumer standpoint. At some point, you feel like, you know, forget it, I don't have any privacy, I give up. You know, you know, like I, you know, all my stuff's out there, whatever, I can't deal with it. And I have friends that are like, you know, they don't care as much, or it's not a hotbed issue.
Sure.
I have other friends that are like, I'm not going to, you know, I'm turning my GPS off my phone. Like, yeah. I don't want anybody to know where I am at any point.
Putting a little tinfoil hat on.
Over my webcam, I got that little tape, you know, I got all this stuff. And so where are we in that balance? Where are Americans more kind of laissez-faire about privacy at this point, where they're like, okay, it is what it is, or are they more kind of stringent on, you know, forget it, I lock this down, this I'm not going to tolerate this?
I think there's a couple things. So if you look at purely privacy, people are much more aware that they are the product than they were even 5 years ago.
Right, because if you're not paying for something, then
you are the product.
Yeah,
you're being sold to.
Right,
and
so
we
Facebook's
use...
free. Not exactly.
but we love the services, right? Like you can pull up a real-time map that shows traffic.
Right.
Well, the only reason it does that is because we all contribute to that every
right.
day,
and
right?
They know exactly where you are.
So on that dimension, the U.S. consumer is far more aware than they were across all generations, even millennials, which is surprising when you look at some of these trends, right? People are more aware of it. Now, doesn't mean they necessarily change their behavior, but they're much more aware, they're more sensitive to it. I think if you start to really break that down and then look at what's actually happening from a theft standpoint and how that changes behavior or drives things, typically the problem is the thefts are so big and so massive that, you know, we have these breaches where we talk about hundreds of millions of records
right.
stolen or billions of records stolen, as was with Yahoo. We all feel helpless, right?
Because right. like,
the numbers are so big.
Right.
Absolutely. But the real problem is, you're almost desensitized to it, right? Because the numbers are so big, and it's every year there's some big thing happening, right? Like that. So you get desensitized to it. And then when the data is actually used to harm you, it's often so disconnected from the breach that you from a psychology standpoint, you don't associate.
Right. You don't connect like it would happen because of that thing 3 months ago.
Absolutely.
You're not connecting those dots. You're like, oh, bummer for me.
I got
a bad charge on, Wisconsin. My credit card.
Or somebody opened up a new credit card. I didn't know about it for 6 months, right?
Right.
If you hadn't locked your credit card file, that's certainly something that could happen. Or credit file. That's certainly something that could happen. And that's really the problem, right? As consumers, we're not associating the things that are happening with the impact to us.
Right.
And that disconnect and that desensitization to it really becomes problematic. Because now we're not necessarily taking action that we need to. I was just earlier that seeing some stat, I think it was earlier this week, where less than 50% of US consumers that would have been impacted by one of these big breaches that happened last year have actually gone and done very simple things to try to limit or minimize the damage. And that's really concerning, because basically what it's saying is that the data that's out there continues to be valuable. And because it continues to be valuable, the actors that stole it are going to continue to go after it, right? So until some of those trends change, then we're going to continue to face some of these problems.
And then from the business standpoint, it seems like the consumer is demanding a level of speed that they're having to deal with.
Like, absolutely.
When you're,
and
like
convenience.
You said, that chip thing. Oh, it took an extra 5 beats to clear, and we're all frustrated,
absolutely.
Right? It's like the world we live in.
Million miles an hour.
Right? Right?
Yep.
I mean, just think about the time it took to swipe was X, and the time it took for the chip was what? 10 seconds? I mean, it wasn't 10 seconds. Was it 10 seconds?
Yeah, probably.
Right. And that was like, we're all like,
it's basically infinity.
Our, right.
Absolutely. So, yeah, and I mean, this is a very common problem. I mean, as we use these services, and as they're faster and as they're more convenient, as they're more seamless, we want everything to be like that, right? And I think it's fantastic. If you look at just you really could trace these roots back to the Apple effect, is that they consumerize this. Because before that, the iPhone wasn't necessarily new, right, from a hardware or technology standpoint. It was new from a user experience standpoint, right? So it basically has had this massive effect of consumerizing everything that we interact with in the business world and outside. And I think it's great, because as we, as business owners, as business individuals, use, whether it's our CRM, our ERP, our accounting system, whatever that is, the interfaces have gotten better. They've gotten more friendly, right? So there's this massive effect that that's had, and they've had to from a competitive standpoint. And we at Evident spent a lot of time talking about this balance of friction, whether it's from onboarding or asking for additional information, and then security, right? And typically you can't raise, so normally you would say, as I increase security, I'm going to increase friction. And I'm going to cause the user to have to jump through more hoops, right? And we've all faced this with different type of extra login steps that we have to do online.
They got to text me a number now.
And you have to type that in, that second factor authentication, right? Or you have to have a hardware key that you use, all that. But we really see a world where you can increase the security and decrease friction, right? The technology exists to do that. It just has to be put together in the right ways to make that happen. And that's kind of the utopia for us that we're shooting
for. So that's where you're aiming.
Absolutely.
Now, from a standpoint, from a speed standpoint, like if I want to be hired by one of these sharing companies and they're using your service, is this something that, hey, I apply and then within minutes I'm hired? Or does this take a month to go through all the vetting? Like, how do you kind of shrink that timeline?
Well, so first of all, the user experience, we build it in a way where...
Who's the user?
The user would be you who are applying to one of them. You're applying for the job, effectively.
Right.
We do a couple of things. So one of the key things that we've seen is that more often than not, these users are applying via mobile.
Right.
So they have this relatively small device. It's not easy to type, first name, last name, address, date of birth, social security number. I mean, the list goes on of all that information. We see ways to even improve that. So, and this is a great example of that balance. if you can do the document scan, which is what we would call that first step of proofing.
But a document scan could be a photo.
The document scan would be the read of the identity card or passport.
So right, but so license. I just take a photo of my...
Exactly.
And then
exactly.
send it to you. That's considered a document scan. Now you have that.
And now you don't need to type your first name, last name,
right, it's driver's
license
there.
Number, date of birth, address, right? So you see that as ways to actually expedite it. And when mm-hmm. we start to look at some of these demographics, we've seen some of our customers actually improve their onboarding times and their conversion rates because it's just easier and simpler.
Right.
So it's a great example of technology that you can use to
because
do that.
You're making that the company's problem, not the user's problem.
Correct. Correct. And we can apply technology to that. So you get that kind of utopia. You get increased security.
Right.
You have a better confidence
because
in who you're
dealing
with.
Because it's better to have their photo of their ID
Absolutely.
Than all their information typed in.
And we all know this. When you type stuff in, you end up
make
with typos.
A mistake. Right.
Right. Something doesn't clear.
And then you
got to
kick
align.
It back. And it's like, is it Mary or Mark? You know, like they typed the wrong letter. And then all of a sudden now it's back. And now another day's gone by or an hour or whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah. So back to the kind of the root of your question, when we do this onboarding, we typically can clear people instantly. But it really depends on what checks or what verifications are needed. Some may take longer than others. And then it starts to become what is the turnaround time with that source of data? So when we communicate something, we communicate a fact from an authoritative source. And if that authoritative source takes 3 days,
right, then you can't.
We're not adding any time to that, but
right.
we also can't speed that up.
Right.
We try to work with our providers to improve it where possible, but there's also just the reality of that's, you know, the state of technology they have, the state of their process.
Right.
We're bound by that.
And then, so then as long as everybody understands kind of the parameters, then you can tell, okay, this is going to take 4 days for us to complete this. And then everybody can manage the expectations of everybody else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the nice thing about when you start to integrate with our software is that we actually believe a lot in transparency to that provider, that individual that's applying for that job. So they can actually get a sense of where it is, right? Is it pending collection of the data or is it pending a decision by the company? So they now have a better sense with transparency, their anxiety or their understanding of where it is in the process is much clearer.
Now, where do like drug tests fit into this?
Drug tests, we have not seen a lot of these sharing economies do drug tests.
Really?
Yeah. They'll look at indicators such as criminal history.
Right.
But they're not actively doing drug tests generally. And the, you know, the reason is a drug test typically is a lot harder to go do. So you would have to go to a testing facility. You know, you can't just take a swab, right? And send it
right,
in.
Right, that defeats the purpose.
It defeats the purpose. You have to go to a facility where they have all these security protocols to make sure the sample that's provided is from you.
Right.
And you go through that process. So you know, we have seen drug tests implemented where it's warehouse and some of the OSHA regulations or where it's DOT and it's commercial driving come into play. But that's more of at a regulatory standpoint, it's required. That's when we see these marketplaces implementing those sort of things. But in general, it's just not really used.
That's not part of your world yet. It might be at some future point.
We can do that. We just haven't seen it used in broad by these.
So the customers aren't asking for it.
Yeah, because once you start doing drug tests, you're talking, someone's got to physically go somewhere.
Right.
You're not getting people on your platform to provide services if they have to do that level of friction. So
right.
it's definitely a turnoff. And then there's pretty high costs associated with that for them as well.
Now, what's next for you guys?
We're busy, obviously. Mm-hmm. We've only been around for about 2 years. We shipped product beginning of 2017. So we're just over a year. We're continuing to grow our customer base. And we'll start to look at some markets outside of kind of our core where we focus right now of these marketplaces. We see these use cases of you being able to authentically identify yourself online to really anyone, any company, or anything, right? So you start to think of IoT coming into play too, you know, walking up to a building that, yes, you should be permitted in the building because you passed this series of checks instantly, those sort of applications. So really broadly, you know, we'll start narrowly focusing on kind of adjacent markets mm-hmm. and then continuing to expand outside of that.
And what do you need more of? How can we help you?
we're always happy to entertain customer problems and see what we can do to solve them. So, you know, anyone that has an issue identifying or verifying something about a consumer, whether it's a customer or an employee or a provider, you know, feel free to reach out to us and we'd be happy to discuss the problem at hand and talk about what we can do to help address it.
Now, what does that problem look like from their standpoint? How do they know they have a problem that you can solve?
Really, it's any question that you have about how do I verify X about somebody? That would be a problem.
But is it because, like, okay, the people aren't who they... I keep hiring people who aren't who they say. Like, what does the pain look like from their standpoint?
Oftentimes, what we've found is that our customers are saying, I offer this base service. I offer dog walking, for example. But I don't really know how to, at scale, verify that someone is trained in animal care. There are many certifications out there. How do I go do that at scale when I'm talking about hundreds or thousands of people onboarding a day? And that's really typically where we come in, is that those harder problems that they face, they can go do a background check. There's plenty of background check providers out there. When you talk the basic criminal checks. But when you start talking about those other cases,
it's real specific,
that's absolutely where we come in.
Certifications that it's harder for them to, at scale, kind of manage it.
So I would say that's one use case. The other use case is if your onboarding process is onerous and administratively painful because you're spending a lot of time manually reviewing applications, we'd love to have a conversation with you as well about how we might be able to improve that. And we've got customers where they have multiple dedicated people that do this every day. And you just think about the annual expense associated with that, as well as some of the actual liability resulting in different people making different judgments based on the information that comes in. You know, this stuff is often not black and white. Our platform, from a technology and compliance standpoint, can both automate that and then remove that liability to ensure you have consistent evaluation of that. And we start to get into other things like EEOC and Title VII evaluations. For pre-employment, these are all concerns that sharing economy companies should be aware of and should be thinking about.
And are there more and more sharing companies popping up?
We were talking about
the dog walking, but like, are there new ones? Like, you're like, oh my god, how are these
every day? Yeah,
like what's kind of a weirder one that you've seen lately?
So we've started to interface with a few that offer what they call quote unquote experiences. So one, say you want to have a barbecue in your backyard,
right?
But you don't want to have a grill. You don't want to have a pop-up tent. You don't want to have chairs. So you don't want to have all that.
They're bringing me a barbecue.
Literally, you just say, I want the barbecue experience for 20 people. They sign up, they deliver the equipment.
It.
They rent it for you for a day.
They cook.
They don't
cook
right? No, that's your responsibility. But maybe that's something they want to offer, right? But yeah, so I mean, every day I feel like I'm hearing about some new, different application of these sort of sharing kind of
companies.
They're
not going away.
Nope. And you see a lot of these really big ones, whether you talk accommodations like home sharing or car sharing. There's no lack of others thinking they're going to do something different. So we have a lot of people popping up for car sharing to say, hey, I want to do car sharing for specific community of interest. So for senior people that need to
handicapped. Get around. I'm only dealing with people that are handicapped.
Absolutely, right? So you have a lot where they've seen these really big markets that are valued
in the
billions.
Right, and now we're going to niche it out and go small.
Absolutely. They can do something highly specialized. That market cap for that business might only be 10 million, but it's happy as a lifestyle business for them. So we see a lot of those happening, but I think the sharing economy is here to stay. You know, by some metrics, more than 50% of the U.S. operates in some form of freelance, gig economy, side hustle.
So that's how most people, there's now almost a majority of the population has some sort of a side hustle on the side.
Absolutely.
Making another $100 a week or here and there.
Yep.
And they can jump in and out of it whenever they feel like it.
These are massive shifts in employment trends, right?
And
obviously it has huge social impacts for us as a country, right? You start talking about some of the traditional social safety nets going away, but the trends are definitely there to stay. And it's the millennials want the freedom, the flexibility, the ability to specialize and focus, right? Not be bogged down in a 9 to 5 behind.
And they can travel. Look, I'm going to move to Austin for a while and I can just be a Lyft driver there.
They are. Absolutely.
Nothing changes.
Absolutely.
They can live have the same income opportunities wherever they are.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, you talk about all these lower skill type of things. There's a lot of platforms out there that offer higher skill, more kind of white collar. So design work, marketing work, development work, engineering, software engineering work.
Right.
There's platforms out there that if you wanted to do that, you just go post your services. And then, if you need that service, but you don't want to hire someone full time for it, that's, you go, you get matched on that. You meet someone that's going to do a fantastic job because they're much deeper, much more specialized than you would get if you hired someone more junior to do that. And that way you're kind of balancing your need with the expense and you get a tremendous amount of value from it.
Good stuff. So once again, the website for you guys?
Is www.evidentid.com.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for talking about this important kind of evolution in the way we work nowadays. I mean, you guys are a key player in this.
Really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton, our producer, Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.